to all of our lives. And so we can think of that as we wait for Jesus as well, and how Jesus plays that role in our lives. And we can bring all of our longings and desires and frustrations, whatever it is that we're experiencing. This week I had kind of an interesting interaction at the grocery store that I've been thinking a lot about since. In my own kind of moment of hecticness and stress, running around trying to get things done earlier this week, and I got to the checkout and got kind of thrown, because I noticed that the woman in front of me had a very specific list of things that she was checking out with. So she had a couple 4-packs of individual small wine bottles. She had a big giant stack of microwave meals, and she had 4 big bags of specialty cat food, and then 1 bag of walnuts, which was kind of a weird thing. And so I got distracted and awkward, to be honest. I just saw that and just, you know, was kind of projecting things onto her. I'll just be totally blunt about it. Wondering, you know, like going home with her cats, hanging out, and nothing bad with that, but it just felt like I got a glimpse into this woman's life in kind of a strange way. So I was standing there again, stressed and awkward and not knowing what quite to do with myself. And then this sort of the thing hanging over the day broke because the cashier made this big sigh, like, oh, because he was really hot. And we all kind of noticed that and started to then make small talk together because, you know, it's that time of year when it's really cold outside, so all the places inside turn their heat up like a ton, and then you're in your jacket, so by the time you're in there for very long, it's actually really hot, more than even like the summer. And I was in a Meijer, and so they have these big windows by the cashier, so they're basically getting a greenhouse effect too. So we're all joking around about that, and like, oh man, can you believe, like, you come to work and it's, you know, 25 degrees out, but it can feel really hot inside. And it kind of gave this nice break and breath, like I wasn't focused on my stress anymore. And it made the woman then that was in front of me even kind of stop and notice as we were all chatting together. And I had a very strange stack of things too, because I was buying basically in bulk a bunch of snack things and macaroni and cheese and all this stuff, because I was shopping to get our snack packs for what we were sharing with Goshen Lane Elementary and packing up with the Scouts midweek this week. And she actually said, "That's so great," and gave a little bit of cash to help towards that purchase because she wanted to chip in. Just really wonderful and generous, and it became this moment of this nice breath of peace and calm on a day that I was feeling a little bit scrambly. And I mentioned again the church just to say what we were doing and why I was getting all that stuff, but you know, I didn't follow up on my notice of her items the same way that she had followed up on her noticing my items for me. Now, again, I didn't bring it up earlier because I'm trying to make fun of her that she should feel bad or that that's not a perfectly good life. But, you know, maybe it would take a thoughtful approach to say, "Hey, I noticed and I wonder, would you like to have a place to come hang out and spend time with people and meet some folks?" Again, I don't want to be presumptuous, but I wondered basically as I walked away from that. Like, she had taken this moment to notice something about me and say, I want to follow up with it. And because I felt a little awkward about it, I didn't do the same thing for her. And maybe that was an opportunity missed, or a way that I could have participated more in peace rather than just saying, well, I don't want her to think I'm a jerk for pointing out that maybe she doesn't get to spend a lot of time with people from what I concluded from your purchases. And maybe I would be wrong, but maybe it was worth me, like, putting myself out there to be wrong in the effort to be kind. And that stuck with me a lot as I've been thinking about our Advent theme for the week of peace, because it's an example of the real complexity that peace actually has. Sometimes we just look at a sense of peace being about quiet or calm or maybe an emotional element where I don't feel tense or anxious anymore. And even some of our own favorite carols do the same type of thing. Like, think of Away in a Manger and Silent Night. They portray Jesus as peaceful because he's quiet and not very bothered even while sleeping around animals. But, I mean, I gotta say, Jesus is asleep on the hay and someone doesn't have their head on a swivel, he's not going to stay peaceful very much if there's some munchy animals around. And the other thing that's really important to remember is that for Jesus, heavenly peace throughout his life was not so much about being passive or quiet. It was about standing up against oppression and making things right, even if it came at great cost. And that's what gets more at the complexity of peace, that part of it that has to do with responding to and managing conflict, where peace is actually really needed the most, and it takes work. How do we work on our own and with others when we're managing difficult emotions? Or how do we deal with very real harm and pain that happens? And we want to make sure that we don't just escalate things if we try. When do we know to let things go, and when do we want to take a stand for peace to really be experienced? And I don't think it's a remarkable or controversial observation to say that peace does not really seem to be a defining trait of our culture right now. Most of us probably have relationships where we'd like to figure out how to experience more peace in them, but how to do so feels really difficult. Peace seems especially needed in many ways right now, but its complexity then also makes it feel that much more difficult to attain. So thankfully, we have scriptures like those this morning that speak powerfully on the full range and complexity of peace, rather than just treating it like some simple or sentimental or passive feeling. And I don't know how many of you felt like, you know, our Philippians passage probably sounds a lot more like peace that we're used to, right? Coming together, having the same heart and mind, Jesus being really loving. The Malachi passage is a little bit trickier. It sounds kind of harsh, like there's going to be a refiner's fire and launderer's soap, and that might not feel as peaceful right at first, but that complexity comes out because we have both of those types of passages. And when we hold them up together, I think we can see four key elements of what godly and full peace really means. The first one is humility. Right? We hear in Philippians that Jesus did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. And so we similarly shouldn't act like we're better than others or look only to our own interests. Peace starts when we say it's not just about me, it's about us, all of us as co-stakeholders, not trying to play power games, but lifting each other up. Second element of peace that we see in these verses is justice, that we're not supposed to just let things that are wrong stand, or have one group experience comfort at the expense and discomfort of someone else. In Malachi 3:5, we see that especially with that idea of all of the people that God is going to testify for and stand up for, even in sort of a legal setting. And then it again mentions that refiner's fire, launderer's soap. So this is like hard work, transforming work. Stuff's not going to be easy or nice all the time, but that change and transformation that's good is going to come. And that's really important because it shows us that bringing peace in these circumstances is not just about giving out condemnation. It's not just about making somebody feel bad for something. There's a path forward for anyone who needs that refining to grow and to be a part of a better way together with others. And then that leads us to that next element of peace, I think, is in both of these scriptures. Grace. Philippians 2:8 says that Jesus took that cost of all of the things that are wrong in the world upon himself and enabled forgiveness and is willing to treat us as more than just a collection of problems or sins and then transform us to wholeness by helping us deal with our sins and struggles. And people are allowed to not be perfect. It doesn't mean that God casts us out. There's patience. Faults are not the last word in our lives. We believe that growth and resolution is possible because of God's Spirit moving and having that grace and forgiveness for us. And then lastly, that comes from reconciliation. We're able to have a restored connection. In Malachi, it said the refiner's fire brings about the ability for people to join in worship in the temple again, that they're being brought back to close connection with God. In Philippians, the grace and love of Jesus' ministry, death, and resurrection invites us to God's family and empowers us to be a peaceful community like Paul described, of being of one mind, of thinking of each other in love, of serving each other. And so the goal of peace is not the elimination of enemies. It's a whole new community bound together by those qualities. So when we recognize all those aspects of true and full peace, we can recognize in particular that it doesn't mean just a lack of conflict, but rather that it must have a healthy, appropriate confrontation sometimes that's constructive and covenantal. It's about shared struggle. It's not about striking people down. And it's those four values that really help us discern when it's healthy to not start a conflict. And that is what helps promote peace. Or when maybe a confrontation that's constructive and good is worth doing. If we find ourselves in a confrontation, like I know many of us still have to juggle, we can see how to steer it towards something that is healthy and then keep it that way so that we can experience peace. Mm-hmm. See, if we're starting conflicts or digging into them when they start just because we like to be winners and be in control, like I was talking about myself earlier, or when we come to them and we aren't able to have a posture of consideration for another person's experience, or if we aren't trying to have an idea from this conflict of how it will actually encourage growth in both of us and another person and what we'll share together going forward, then that's probably the type of conflict that is not about bringing peace, even if we might feel personally satisfied in the moment of it. Of the same token, if we're avoiding conflicts or running away from them when they come up, because we most of all just want to feel more comfortable, even when we see that something is wrong for ourselves. Or if, honestly, and I felt this way myself, if we kind of like feeling angry and feeling judgmental, and we want to avoid talking to someone because that might soften our hearts a little bit about it, or if we don't really want to put our thoughts and feelings in interaction with another person, because then we might also have to change some of our thoughts and feelings as we take their thoughts and feelings into account, then those are all reasons that it's probably not best to avoid the conflict, that we're just creating a conflict within ourselves that's going to maybe cause bitterness or more division in the long term. And that God can give us a chance through that grace, through that reconciliation, through that justice, through that humility to experience full peace. And we should know and find encouragement. There are truly amazing and life-giving ways that people have lived out that type of peace, balancing when to step back, when to step forward, even in the most difficult of circumstances. I encourage you to research things like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that happened in South Africa after apartheid, that was specifically about people having to come out and say, this is the problem that happened between us, and we're going to make it right. We're not just going to cast people aside, but they're also not going to be able to avoid responsibility. Now there's really amazing restorative justice programs in justice systems all over the world, including here in the U.S., where victims and perpetrators are brought together, and you even see things like examples of someone giving a job to someone who killed their child in an accident because they knew that that person didn't have an opportunity otherwise, and they caused harm, but then a new type of bond was able to form. Those are really hard things to do, but they're amazing when they can happen. And so I do encourage you to look up those things, but I'm not going to linger on them much today, because I know that that can feel maybe a little bit too far out from our experience, or a little too abstract. And there are ways that this can still sit in our very own personal experience and relationships and interactions. Because I'll admit, these ideas, this understanding of the full breadth and complexity of peace is something that feels very personal and practical for me. As I shared during the Advent reflection, I've had plenty of experiences in my life, both being happy to be stuck in conflict because I thought that I could win and it made me feel in control. Or I didn't really want to understand somebody else's perspective and where they were coming from, and was happy to just feel really smug and self-satisfied about not engaging with them about something. So I also really do believe in the world-changing power of God's peace. I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of the way God is bringing reconciliation into the world for people who are being mistreated, for people who are experiencing unhealthy conflict. But I know that I have to learn and watch myself about this all the time. One of the things that was most influential for me in kind of understanding that and moving forward was in college. You know, like I said, I didn't have a bad relationship with my parents, but we did argue a lot. And when I left for college, I wanted to keep growing, but I was going to have to come back and kind of reset that relationship in some ways to have it be fully healthy and good, like we've come to now. But in college, the aha moment for me came when I was at a party with a film partner I worked with, a young woman named Sarah. And we were hanging out, and some guys kept walking by and just saying really gross, misogynistic comments to her. And, you know, I was kind of watching her reaction, trying to figure out what to do. And eventually I just decided to, like, basically, like, stand right in front of them and say, you got to stop doing that. It's really gross and stupid. Nobody wants to be treated that way. Just stop, go away, leave her alone. She talked to me afterwards, though, and she said, you know, why did you step up in that particular way? Did you not think that I could speak up for myself if I wanted to in that moment? And I realized, yeah, maybe I didn't really check in with her beforehand to know, like, is she wanting to avoid this for a reason, or is she waiting to do something in particular? I was trying to justify myself to her as she was talking, and she said, you know, Rob, I don't think that you were, you know, trying to be like my knight in shining armor swooping in and thinking I was completely helpless. I know you're not like a bad person, you don't respect me. You don't have to justify yourself to me. You don't have to, like, win some argument, or you're not going to lose if I tell you where I'm coming from. I just want you to know that that made me feel a certain way in that moment, and I think that we can work together to be in a good place in our friendship. She's like, I don't want guys like that to just treat women well because another guy tells them to. And you're like a big, tall guy, and this person was kind of shorter. So if he's only doing it because he feels physically intimidated by someone else, that doesn't help his interactions with women long term. He needs to see that I can deal with that stuff, and that there's respect from the fact that I can deal with it, and that it's true no one should treat each other that way and make each other feel small, but that if I was the one who said, this isn't going to affect me, or when it does, I'm going to take control of the situation, that changes someone's perception if they're willing to talk that way otherwise. And she even told me, and this is the aha moment, it may be weird, but she said, you know, like, you don't have to keep pushing back on me or saying, no, like, I get it, but I did kind of keep doing this thing of, like, I know, but I didn't really think that about you. I was trying to do this, and I'm sorry I didn't understand, but really you should see that, you know, see it from my perspective some more. And she said, you know, when we work on, like, our film projects together, you don't get defensive like you're getting defensive right now. If we say, why did you do that, it feels like, yeah, like, let's work on this thing in the film and say, why did we do that? And is there a better way to do it? And we're, like, all feeling excited about working together. But for some reason, when it's an interpersonal interaction, you feel defensive. You can't hear somebody else say, hey, like, let's work on this together. And that did click something. Something about the way that she framed that for me made it click. And so I could see that there were these constructive opportunities for working together, even if it took a confrontation saying, you know, like, I'd like you to see this differently. And that could be something where we're working on something together and not just about, like, fighting between my ideas and her ideas. And it was the first time that I was able to see an interpersonal confrontation in a way that I didn't have to feel defensive. I didn't have to feel insecure. I didn't have to feel like I had to justify myself all the time. I could work with somebody and move forward and accept a time of change in myself without being personally threatened. So when I started to learn that, and I could start to see better the breadth and depth of true holistic peace that God shows us in the Bible and in our verses today, I feel like I'm still continuing to learn that and work on it for this type of peace. And it's especially difficult because, honestly, it really involves making peace with yourself first. Like, I'm okay being told that I can be a part of some change, and that doesn't mean that I have to feel bad. And it's often helping another person feel safe to make peace with themselves and feel the same way, so that when you talk to them, they don't feel like they have to be on the defensive all the time. And then once we have that peace within ourselves from God's love and experience as the ultimate foundation, then we can build something new together. Because that's what God did for us. God made peace. He said, I don't have to stay above it all and separate from my creation. I'll step out. I'll take cost. I'll take harm upon myself. I'll show the act of love to give peace and a path to new life that's built on love and grace, instead of God just deciding, I'm just going to offer punishment and shame and fear. And that's what my friend offered me. She didn't say she's talking to me to make me feel bad. She wanted us to move forward together in the best place. That's what's made the most difference in my other relationships, like with Wendy or my family and my kids, with kids I've worked with people in, like, assistance programs. There are oftentimes when people come to me on those types of things and they're really angry, they're really impatient, they're really stressed out, and the best thing that ends up helping is saying, just tell me what your experience is. I'm here to help you. I'm here to walk with you. You don't have to feel like you have to prove something to me, for my kids, You don't have to show that you are independent by fighting with me. Like, you can show me that you're independent by telling me this is what's important to me and I trust you to work on it together with me. And for Wendy and I, that when we can separate problems and not say you're the reason why we're having an issue in our marriage, but say this is an issue in our marriage and together we will work on it. And at first, right, we can think that means that people aren't going to be taking responsibility or that something will be like too awkward. But actually, this is a way that we invite each other to take responsibility together that builds each other up and doesn't tear someone down or ostracize each other. So some of the most powerful things that we can ask God for ourselves and then that we can try to offer others is to feel that sense of safety and security, secure enough to be more open to what's outside our own preferences, secure enough to be open to things that are outside of our control and our familiarity, secure enough to be ready to have our own likely need to change feel okay and not scary sometimes, even if that means even saying, yeah, I might have been wrong, but that doesn't mean I'm a horrible person. That's an amazing gift of peace. The best example of this that I can think of that's been inspirational for me too, that some of you may be familiar with, is the Chronicles of Narnia books and Aslan, who's sort of the Jesus figure in that world. He's a lion. And a lot of people will often say when they first hear that he's a lion, because the characters will all talk about how wonderful he is and you can't wait to meet Aslan, but they're like, a lion? That sounds really scary. And they'll say, is he safe? And in almost every book, there's some version of this interaction of like, no, he's a lion. He's not safe. But he's good. And so then there are all these interactions where Aslan gives peace through constructive conversation. It's not always easy, but it's good. There's an example when a character named Eustace goes to an enchanted island and becomes a dragon. It's kind of an embodiment of his bitterness and anger that he'd been carrying with him before. And in order to get rid of that, Aslan has to use his claws and like rip his skin off of him, basically, so that the dragon skin comes off and then he's just left with his human form. And you can imagine that that'd be painful and difficult, but it's also healing and good. And Aslan comforts and helps him through even the difficult part. My favorite book in the series is called The Horse and His Boy. And there's an example towards that where a character named Erebus, who's this rich young woman in a different country, she escapes because she's going to be married off to like a really old, horrible man in an arranged marriage. But to do that, she has to drug her servant so that she can run away. And then the servant got whipped for not watching her well enough. And so at the end, when she needs to run and kind of warn some other characters that they're about to be attacked, Aslan comes as a lion and is chasing after her and the horse that she's riding on to help them have extra motivation to get out of where they are. And he scratches her back as part of that. And he tells her later, the reason why I did that is because those are equal to the stripes that happened on your servant's back from where you left her and let her take the punishment. And so he's building up empathy and solidarity in her. He doesn't ever put her at risk, but he's helping her understand that full range and complexity and depth of peace in conflict. It's not easy, but it's gracious and constructive. And so that's what I try to then open myself up for when I'm in a position of having to make peace with someone. Like, can I be open to saying, this can be constructive and God will walk with me and I don't have to feel threatened? And similarly, if I feel like I need to bring something to other people, I'm trying to continue to learn to say, I want to be gracious. I want to see where they're coming from. I want us to work on this together. So hopefully we can see that the gifts that God offers with this in ourselves and in our relationships, especially when they do have a lot of pain and conflict in them. If we build a foundation there, we'll also be able to admit that the world around us needs this a lot too. I know I try to stay kind of in an interpersonal way we can relate to, but we know if we need it, lots of people around us need it. The systems around us need this type of peace. Our society, our culture could also benefit from this. And church is the perfect place to practice it. Because we have a good foundation, because we have the Spirit of God moving amongst us to help all of this happen. So if we can learn it here and then take it with us, man, what a difference that could make in a world that we know is right now pretty devoid of peace a lot of times. So where those things cross with our relationships, and where God is showing us the world isn't the way it should be, we can be amazing gift givers during this season. Even if it involves vulnerability, even if it involves change, we can be dedicated to making peace through God's leading and empowerment, however we can. We're going to move into the practice.